I think this song sums up this album perfectly. Over a few times. Love is a Losing Game by Amy Winehouse off her 2006 album Back to Black. It's also number 451 out of 500 on the Spotify original, The 500, with me, Josh Adam Myers. What's up, you Kadoogles? Fleece Army, hope you guys are having a good week. Hope you enjoyed listening to the record. And I just want to say thank you for tuning in to the only podcast where we're going through Rolling Stone Magazine's list of the 500 greatest albums. If you haven't yet, do an Instagram story of how you're listening to the 500. Tag me at Josh Adam Myers. Put a hashtag 500 podcast and underneath it write, what is my ranking in the Fleece Army? And I will give it to you. Okay? You do that for me, I'll rankify your kashplooky. All right, guys, a little bit about the record. So this album was released on October 27th, 2006 on Island Records, produced by Salaam Remy and the one and only Mark Ronson. And this is the second and final album from one of my favorite British vocalist songwriters of all time, Amy Winehouse. You gotta know, she was born a nice Jewish girl in North London in 1983. She had family members that were jazz musicians, and her sister Cynthia was a jazz vocalist and like encouraged Amy to sing and to train in singing. So singing in childhood, she started writing her own songs at about 15, and then she was singing jazz standards in England, the National Youth Jazz Orchestra, and at clubs by the time she was 16. A couple years later, she signed to Simon Fuller's 19 management, but it's kept a secret because she's a kid. However, she was discovered by accident after an Island Records A&R man heard her on some production demos and hunted her down to identify who was the person with this incredible voice. Then a year later, in 2003, her jazzy debut, Frank, came out, which is a nod to both Sinatra and her candid lyrics. Aside from two cover songs on the record, Amy wrote everything, and the critics went nuts for its neo-soul, funk, dub, jazz elements. However, despite all the good reviews, Amy wasn't happy about it. So in 2006, influenced by the girl groups of the 50s and the 60s and the tumultuous on-and-off relationship that she had with her future husband, Amy began her second album. Salaam Remy, who had produced most of her first record, co-produced this with up-and-coming producer Mark Ronson, and they borrowed the New York singer Sharon Jones' band, the Dap Kings, to back Amy up. The funny thing is, Amy never met the Dap Kings. She didn't meet them until after the record was done, but you could definitely feel the energy of this invigorated masterpiece of heartbreak, defiance, love, lust, and substance abuse. So with this amazing album, Amy exploded into the music scene. Everybody knew who she was because of the beehive hairdo, the overdrawn Cleopatra eyeliner, and her ice-cold, zero-fucks-given attitude. In fact, that image owed so much to Ronnie Spector of the girl group The Ronettes that Ronnie would often mistake pictures of Amy for her younger self. Back to Black was an enormous success. Some could say it was because Amy was a perfectionist. Some could say it was the sound of her vocals. Maybe it's the throwback appeal. But one thing is for sure, Amy became the first female British artist to win 5 Grammys in 2008. But Amy had a long and troubled history of alcohol and substance abuse. We all know that. We all saw it in the media. She also dealt with mental health issues, self-harm, violence. She had an eating disorder, and her fame and infamy saw her in a constant battle with the press and the paparazzi, who hounded her at every moment. Tragically, Amy died of acute alcohol poisoning on July 23rd, 2011, at the age of 27. But Back to Black became the biggest-selling British album of the 21st century, and she holds the Guinness World Record for a female having 8 songs simultaneously in the UK singles chart. And without Amy, I don't think you have Adele, Estelle, Cottrell, I just made up the last one, Duffy, Lana Del Rey, Florence and the Machines, you could throw in Lady Gaga, And since her death, she has inspired a generation of young wannabe influencers to sing just like Billie Holiday in their Instagram stories. My guest today has a deep connection to this record. One of my closest friends, the one and only Dulce Sloan. You know her from The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. This album and her life are so connected. This was such an incredible experience to be able to go through this record with Dulce and find out why she's so connected to it. Don't forget to rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to The 500 and listen free on Spotify or anywhere you get your pods. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. And for all things 500, go to the website 500podcast.com. Well, nothing left to say, but here we go with number 451 out of 500 with Back to Black by Amy Winehouse. Try to call your Dulce Sloan, and I say Dulce. Some people say Dulce, I say Dulce, no.
So glad to be
you
here.
You are sexy and wild. Ooh, girl, smoke a black in my house.
No, they make me lose my voice.
You call me Dulce Sloan, I say hi, hi. So when we talked about the podcast and you reached out a few days later after I asked you what record you wanted to do, mm-hmm. and you said hold Amy Winehouse,
mm-hmm.
because this is my shit.
Yeah.
So what is it about Amy that and this album that you connect with?
Okay, so like this album came out in like 2006, but I didn't buy it until like spring summer 2008,
mm-hmm.
Because I was sad about a boy, well, like two boys. And so like I had heard Rehab, and then one of my friends, I think she had played it, and what song was it? Because I kept trying to figure out like what made me, I think I heard You Know I'm No Good, and I think that's what made me buy it. And so I didn't know what the, because like the first album I got that was like a rap album was like Justin Timberlake. And then
wait, what?
What I'm saying is that, man, like, if you looked at the CDs that I had, they were all like every Bone Thugs and Harmony CD, and then it was
oh,
like
you're
T.
saying that wasn't rap?
That wasn't.
Oh,
rap.
I thought you said was rap. I was
no.
like, just JT been,
no.
been slanging,
so,
slanging bars.
Never. So it's like, so there wasn't a lot of things that weren't rap music that I listened to, because I had like this, and then I had Lily Allen. And then Imogen Heap. So I was just starting to, because I've always listened to like other stuff like Chili Peppers and all the other shit,
yeah.
but I didn't like buy it. I'd be like, oh, this was on MTV or this was on the radio, I'm fine. But this is like the first time I was just like, I need something that's not about guns, hoes, and money. Was basically where I went. Because most of the time I'm listening to music, I want to hear about guns, hoes, and money. Because like I was never, and one of my friends hates me for this, but I was never really huge in R&B.
No Gerald Levert?
No, I'm not 40. So, like, I'm not always throwing a family reunion either. But, like, I bought this because I was sad about a boy.
Really?
Is why I bought this album. Because, like, I had heard stuff from him, and I was like, this will help me. And I was in my house, I was in my room listening to it, and my mother kicked in the door, and we're like, who is this sad bitch?
Turn it off?
Turn this shit off. This hoe is worse than, like, she said, who is this sad bitch? Turn it off. She's worse than Sade. This is a Suicide
what?
Soundtrack. Turn this shit off.
Sade's the shit.
My mother said this is a Suicide soundtrack. She is worse than Sade. Turn this sad bitch
must
off.
Have been like Love is a Losing Game or
whatever
something
song
on.
It was on. My mother said, we are not doing this in this house. Turn this off. But also, but my mother's like,
and then she was like, here, put on some good music. Knock if you buck.
Now, mind
knock
you, don't
you
play.
Knock if you buck. That's some happy music.
It's an amazing
song. If you buck. I'm a nook.
Facts. But anyway, no, I bought it because I was sad about a boy, and my mother was very annoyed by it. Because my mother was in a fit, like, we don't do sad music. I remember being in the shower singing Cry Me a River, and my mother beat on the door and was like, hey, we ain't crying no rivers in here. Shut up. So she don't play that sad shit.
So, all right. So you grew up in a household that was against any kind of.
No, she's the reason I know Sade.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I'm saying like Sade's incredible. But specifically Amy, like what did this boy do to you that made you connect with her?
Oh, man. I gave you a lot of tangents because I'm good for a tangent. Basically, so I don't know if you've ever heard of me speak of a gentleman called nicknamed the Mechanic. Me and him went back and forth from January of 2007 until December of 2015. So right before I moved to LA. And it was just a tumultuous back and forth, off and on relationship.
So in 2008, where is it? Is it over?
So in 2008, it is. So in 2008, I would have. This was like the spring. So end of 2007, one of his, so he decided he didn't want us to date, but he just wanted us to hang out. And I was like, fine, whatever. And so him, like one of his friends was over at the house, who this boy can only be described as walking sex. He is a problem. Because the first time I ever met him, I'm just like, I'm going to have to make this dude hate me. Otherwise, I'm going to fuck him in front of this dude. And so.
I mean, we've all been there.
We've all been there. Yeah. And so
I'm walking chlamydia.
You are.
I sound like walking chlamydia.
You sound like walking scurvy. You sound like an 1800s disease. No, like consumption or something fun like that. And so I was over at the house one day. It was like in December and I was wearing something cute, I guess. So his friend started flirting with me because me and him hadn't spoken in a while. It became a back and forth. What was crazy is that the friend is nicknamed the dummy. Walking sex is nicknamed the dummy because he's so stupid. One day I was at his house and he told me that the reason he was dating me was to get back at the mechanic for a girl that had dated him and quit dating him to date the mechanic.
Were you living in Melrose Place?
No.
What the fuck is going on?
I was
the mechanic. Is this a flavor of love? They
well,
all have nicknames.
I'm not going to say their real names.
Yes.
Well, you'll find out when we start going through the songs, you'll find out.
One was Shlamika.
One of them is actually a third and the other one's a fourth. They're both ridiculous.
Okay.
But I start dating the dummy and sex is amazing. Dumb as a box of rocks.
Yeah.
We can't hold a conversation because there's so much sexual chemistry. But he's also very dumb and he sells drugs and is flagrant on his fucking phone. So he sells weed and like call me. I'm like, where you at? He's like, oh, I'm at the Shell station on Pleasant Hill. I'm like, get off my phone.
Yeah.
First of all, you're selling drugs with a phone with a fucking SIM card in it. You're an idiot for that. So basically, this is what I'm dealing with. Because I started dating a mechanic because I had a 92 Pontiac with 283,000 miles on it that was leaking oil and transmission fluid. So I started dating a mechanic. And he lived down the street from my house. And so I would go over there all the time, and it was just very much off and on, off and on, off and on. He had a tendency to ignore me, which I think is the highest level of disrespect. And so I hated being ignored, and he hated people coming to his house unannounced. So when he would start ignoring me,
I would go to his house unannounced. Typical woman move.
Oh, sure. Right.
Let a man live.
I was also 23.
Sure.
So it was a lot of bullshit like that. Because he's one of those people, there's anything going on in his life that's just causing him stress, he shuts out everybody. So like he won't talk to his mom, he won't talk to his friends. But you don't know if you're the problem. You just know he's disappeared.
Is he going to be coming up a lot in when we talk about this record?
He is the entire album.
Perfect. All right, well, let's get back to Amy. Because okay. I know we're going to be bringing him up, and listeners are like, what album is this again?
It doesn't matter. I'm sad. No, well, I used to be sad. But
she's singing all of this stuff. You're dealing with this asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just the music? Is it just the voice? Is it the look? Because I think that's one of the big questions I wanted to know is why? Is like, why is this album so important? Is it because Amy Winehouse is an icon like Janis Joplin or Stevie Nicks or even someone like Michael Jackson that's going to be remembered, you know, 50 to 100 years
from
now? Well,
like, I always wonder because, like, how many albums did she have before she died?
She had two. She had Frank and she had this one.
Right.
This is the one that blew her up.
Right. And she's in the 27 club where she died at 27.
She's in the club with Brian Jones and Kurt Cobain, Jimi Hendrix. I'm missing, I think, Mama Cass.
Also, I did not know Jimi Hendrix was 27 when he died, because every picture I saw of him, I thought the nigga was 40. So that black cracked.
The black cracked.
That black was all the way to the floor. I think it's because I think people related to this album. I only related to this album because it spoke to a very specific time for me. But I think it's one of those things where it's like, even if you're in a good relationship when you hear this album, it makes you remember. It's like all of those times where you were upset about a person that you were dating and you couldn't articulate how you felt. It perfectly, because it's like those little things where it's just like, this is a bad situation, but I want to be here. And that sometimes I think is hard to explain to people, because like I'd have friends, like one of my friends was one day, I was like, she's like, you can't talk to me about this man anymore because you keep telling me these things. And my mother was like, you only tell me the bad things about him, so I can't justify you still speaking to him. So I think it's a situation where it's like, because there's so many songs in the album where, like, I am very heartbroken about this person, but I also wrote a song about this person. So it's still that wanting somebody to love you and wanting to be loved by somebody, I think, is the entire essence of it. Because there's so many times you deal with people because you're just like, this person loves me and I love them. Why does this not work?
Funny thing that you're talking about this. So she was in a relationship. Mm-hmm. When she made this record.
Oh, of course she was.
But this isn't the album's not about the boyfriend. It's about the guy before.
Right.
And just so everybody knows, this guy's name's Blake. I'm not going to say his name for the rest of the episode because he is such a piece of shit and the reason that Amy Winehouse is gone. So for the rest of the episode, Dulce, what do you want to call this piece of shit?
Let me see a picture of him. His eyes are dead.
So what does that mean? Dead eyes?
Let's call him Dead Eyes.
Oh, he's probably, because he's on heroin. All right, we're going to call him Needle Dick Dead Eyes for the rest of the episode.
We're not going to give you the respect to say your name.
Yeah, well, he doesn't deserve it. Not at all. Because here's the thing, and this is the big thing, is that I was working for a TV station. Most of my fans know. Channel 1 News, first on the dial. I was a music director. I got sent Amy and I got sent Lily Allen. Everybody loved Lily Allen. And I was just like, who is this Amy Winehouse? It was like just everything about her, like the voice, like her style. And then like the unspoken yet spoken talk about her drug use and her life being kind of out of control. Because it didn't start there, but it was like there were like moments that it would pop up. And I just was like, this person is a rock star. This is a Billie Holiday. Like this, she's up there with some of the greatest soul singers of all time.
The thing that bugged me about her, because I was like, Amy Winehouse was like, this isn't a black lady. Because it was kind of like the thing when I first heard her, and I was like, ooh, you know, black lady. And I saw her, and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, you think she's black. But she's just this short Jewish girl, this small little Jewish girl from East or North or South or West London.
Oh my God, you could have looked that up.
I could have, but I forgot it.
Just any kind of direction of London.
She's from London.
But she grew up listening to that music because her dad was a musician,
yes.
Right? And I get it, but it's just like, it's such a... I come from a culture where our music is stolen from us and then it's monetized and given back to us, right? Because black people created every genre of music that we have in America right now. So, and they were the basis for it. So to hear that... another example of that. That's also the reason that I didn't have her album when it first came out, because I was just like, oh, this is just a white girl singing like us. I'm very not interested. And then I found out she was British, and
I think that's her, man. I don't think she's stealing this from anybody.
No, I'm
I
not saying that she yeah. stole it. What I'm saying is that when it comes to how the styles of how people sing, this is not usually, especially for white and British, this is not a style that they sing in. So for me, it was like, oh, so she grew up listening to this? Fine. I have no real opinion. It was just like, oh, I'm not going to consume this in the way that probably other people are consuming it. Because for me, it was, I appreciate the style. I hear what you're listening to. I completely get it. But like, there's Christian singers and then there's gospel singers. Like, you see what I'm saying? So for me, it was just like, okay, this is a style she sings in, whatever. And I really didn't take it in for a while because I was just like, Rehab's cute. I'm good. And I can tell you have to be talented to sing that way. I'm not saying she's not talented, but for me, it was just like, oh, this is a white girl singing like us. She's making money from it. Congratulations, bitch. Ta-da.
Yeah.
And so, but that's always going to be my perspective because I can only come to perspective of a people who are stolen from. And that's the only way I could look at it. So it took me a while to like be like, all right, well, let me listen to this because it ended up being significant to me at the time. But when it first came out, I wasn't going through what I ended up going through 2 years later. And I still had to come to the point where I was just like, that's just how the bitch sings. Like, I had this conversation with a bunch of people, but it wasn't until I had this conversation with black people that I was able to come to terms with it. Because white people going to me, that's how she sings. Like, I don't care what you think.
Yeah.
People aren't stealing from you. So me and I could literally have this conversation with black people. I'm like, what do we think about this? And it had to come to a point, I'm like, all right, that's just how the bitch sings. That's fine.
Okay, on that, not saying you're right or you're wrong. I think this album is probably one of the most lyrically honest records I've listened to so far in this trip down the 500 greatest albums list.
That's why I related to it, yeah, was because of the lyrics.
There you go. All right. So, but also it's like, I think you can put her lyrics up there with Bob Dylan's, like on just sheer poetry, sheer honesty. I think everything about her, like I mentioned, the style, the drugs, the voice, the look, the inconsistency in her live performances, like all of this shit, the heart-wrenching breakup. Well, no, just as it started going, like she was missing shows, she was getting high and drunk. I mean, there's that famous video of her doing cocaine, like doing pulling coke out of her hair, doing
Which
a bump of it.
Baller move. Pulling drugs.
I mean, we've all done a bump on stage. Come on.
Never done.
But I feel like this album is incredible. I don't think every song is perfect, but I think every song stands out in its own track as an individual. I don't think this album sounds the same, but I think after reading the lyrics, listening to the music, knowing her story, and knowing that she's passed, this just hit me. And I honest to God, I'm like, I think it, could it be higher? Yes, but I think this is an incredible record. All right, let's dive into the album. So it opens with a song that you can't get out of your head. And if you lived in the world in 2006, you probably heard this at least 5,000 times. It's Rehab. This is the undeniable hit from the record, and it pulls you right in. So it was written when Amy told producer Mark Ronson about everyone, including her dad, insisting she do something about her drinking during her breakup, and she literally told them no, no, no. So Mark knew a hooky idea when he heard it, and he wrote it and recorded it shortly after. Now, they didn't think this was going to be as big a hit as it was. In my opinion, I'm like, how could you not know that? It's got everything you need in the song. It's got the hook, the horns, the honesty in the lyrics.
This is the reaction that someone would have if they have a drinking problem and they're just like, no, I'm not going. Because we've all met people who've been like, you should probably go to rehab. And this seems the most fun response. I'm not going to fucking
rehab. I
mean,
this is her fighting with her father saying, yes, fuck you, I'm not going to rehab. Because you know it wasn't like, honey, you need to go to rehab. Oh, no, 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 no,
no.
He's probably like, you're killing yourself. You're fucking killing yourself. She's like, I could give a shit. I'm not going. All right, play a little bit of the song for me, Peter.
I don't know.
What the fuck, dude? I don't ever want to drink again. I just, need a friend. This is my favorite part. I'm not going to spend 10 weeks have everyone think I'm on the mend. Because she knows she's not stopping.
Yeah.
That's why it's.
And she's like, I'm just going to go so I'm not crying anymore. And then I'm getting out and I'm going to fucking drink again.
Oh, I love that so much.
But it's like, it's a very honest response because like, if you're someone that's just like, Because, like, I smoke, I'm trying to stop smoking. But then there's a lot of times I was like, I'm going to stop smoking today. And I'm like, I need a fucking cigarette. So, like, you have those moments. You're like, I'm definitely going to do this. I'm definitely going to do this. I'm not doing this.
It's weird, man, because, like, with me and opiates, there were so many nights where I was like, I'm going to die if I go to sleep. But I got to go to sleep because I got to do a show tomorrow or do press in the morning. So I was like, all right, well, if I live through this opiate, you know, night, like, I'm quitting, tomorrow or when I get back to back home, and then you wake up the next morning, you're like, I lived. Fuck yeah, dude. Plop, plop. Let's go hit the motherfucking, hit Sirius XM.
I'm so afraid of drugs.
Well, but that's the thing. It's the same with smoking. It's the same with vaping. It's the same with all of that. She's not lying. That's why this is so great, because she's literally like, she's like, all right, I'll go, but I'm going to drink again.
Everybody
so
spend your money. I'm going to hang out, and then I'm going to get the fuck out of this place, and I'm going to drink again.
So Dulce, you're incredibly open with your comedy, and you are truthful to yourself and to the world around you. In this way, you and Amy are iconoclasts and the same. Why is it vital to be honest in your art like Amy?
When I first started doing stand-up, I would talk about, it was very observational or situational, and Big Kenny, who was mentoring me and got me to start doing stand-up, he was like, when you start talking about yourself, that's when you're going to be good. And it took me a year and a half to do that. One day I was just on a show, and I was just like, I was doing this set, and I was like 2 minutes in, and I was like, fuck this set, and just started talking about just the stuff that I was thinking about, and ended up being good, and I recorded the set, and I ended up with a whole new 10 minutes just because I was like, fuck this bullshit I was doing, because I just kind of had like a break where I was just like, this is not me. And I don't want to say it's like I only know how to talk about my, because everyone, the best thing everybody knows how to do is talk about themselves, but I think that I have to do it because a lot of times it's just a way to get the jumble out of my head, kind of. And also it's, I have to talk about me because a lot of times people don't talk about women that look like me. So that is my way of just adding something, because I've always wanted, I mean, I've been acting since I, and singing since I was a kid. So I've always added something to the creative space or whatever. But I think with stand-up, it's a way for me to show people that women that look like me are people. Because I feel like a lot of times we get characterized, we get caricatured.
Like what I do.
Yes, exactly what you do. And it's, people don't realize that we're almost, we're humans too.
Of course.
But yeah, that's why I can only think of that. Plus, I don't know. I honestly don't know what else to talk about.
No, I get it. It's like, it's, I don't know what I'm supposed to. You can only be honest. And
I don't know what else I'm supposed to tell people.
People have said to me, it's like, you know, because I'm still trying to tap into even more honesty. And people have said to me, when you hit that stuff, it's like, that's it. It's over.
Well, but there's also stuff that I don't talk about because I don't want to. I'm not giving you everything. Like, there's stuff I have to keep to myself. Because if I give you everything, I don't have anything left for me.
Sure.
And then that's why sometimes it's hard to talk to people after shows for me, because you can feel like it's just, hey, great set, let's take a picture, blah, 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 blah. And then they want to go past that. And I'm very happy that you came to the show. I'm very happy that you came to listen to me, because if you couldn't come, I wouldn't have a career. But there's sometimes with people, they just, you can feel they want more from you. And I'm like, I don't know what you need. And so I sometimes feel bad because I can't give them this thing that I don't understand that they want from me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, so I can kind of relate, where it's just like, if you wrote an entire album and you put all your pain in these, what, 10 songs?
11.
11 songs. You put all your pain in these 11 songs. Every time you perform those songs, you open that wound back up.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that would probably contribute to a,
to a junkie. Yeah, she was a junkie. I mean, full blown. Mm. All right, let's go into the second song. Peter, play a little bit of You Know I'm No Good. Run out to meet your chin. This is such a funky song about cheating in a relationship. I love it.
This is my favorite song, like, to, like, just sing just like around my house. Well, no, usually in my car when I was like driving somewhere. But the other thing about this song is, like, sometimes it was like, because in that relationship, a lot of times I would feel bad about myself, about what was going on. A lot of times I would sing this song because I felt like I was singing about myself.
So the first verse starts off with a fight breaking out in a bar when her boyfriend confronts one of the guys she's sleeping with on the side.
Okay, I never got that.
I got the whole song. Here, verse two, she's sleeping with her ex-boyfriend, but she can't get off unless she thinks about her current man, which we've all done.
Have I never heard this song?
Dude, there's still more. Her boyfriend says it's okay for now, but he'll have to stop when they get married. She cries for him because she knows she'll never be faithful.
Okay? I feel like I've never heard this song
before. Best part, verse three. She and her boyfriend have worked things out, but then he notices a carpet burn on her skin from doing it doggy style, probably. Instead of making a big deal out of it, he just shrugs, which actually makes her feel even worse.
Because he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, but I love this song. And you know what? This is actually the story of her boyfriend at the time, which is Alex Kane. So
this isn't about Needle Dick.
No, it's about she fucked Needle Dick.
Uh-huh.
But it's about Alex, her saying to Alex, like, I'm no good. I told you I was trouble.
Yeah.
Have you ever been played?
Yes.
So that relationship with the mechanic, that guy just played you out?
Oh, no, he was too lazy to cheat on me. Because that would require him to put forth effort. It just, I can't talk about this and fully justify why I kept speaking to this man. But it was played as in he lied to me a lot. As in the moment, hey, let's do something this weekend, da 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 da. And he would tell me yes in the moment so he didn't have to deal with the fact that he wasn't going to do it. So as soon as there was any follow-up once I left the house, then it's, well, you know, and this and that. So he never was going to do what he said he was going to do. And all I wanted to do was something as simple. Because, like, I can tell you,
I just wanted to go see Jumanji with the dude.
I just wanted to go to the fucking movies or just go to dinner or just do whatever.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Have you ever played somebody like Amy did?
Him.
Oh, you flipped the script.
Well, because I did date his best friend. And then a year later, I started hooking up with the best friend again. But we didn't tell him because the best friend really wanted to tell him. But there are so many times I said to him, hey, man, because after I stopped talking to the dummy, I was like, listen, that dude is not your fucking friend. Quit fucking with him. I hung out with him. But the whole time I was talking to the dummy, now he was hitting me up. So
here's the real question. Was the D good? That's a no. All right, moving on, guys. Next song has probably the best opening line on the album. It's Me and Mr. Jones. It's the very, very famous, "What kind of fuckery is this? You made me miss the Slick Rick gig." I love this. Oh, man. And then this is the best thing in the fucking world. "What kind of fuckery are you? Side from Sammy, you're my best black Jew."
Which is a wild line.
Which is great, but what's even greater is that the background singers then sing "Best Black
best
Jew" right
black
after.
Jew.
Hit it, play it.
"What kind of fuckery are you? Side from Sammy, you're my best black Jew."
You know why the song is so significant to me?
Why?
Because the mechanic is Mr. Jones.
He's Mr. Jones. Do you know who Mr. Jones really is?
No, the mechanic's last name is Jones.
Oh. Mechanic Jones.
When I bought the album, I was like, okay, these songs are good. And I was listening to it. And when this song came on, I was like, oh, this bitch is here. Like, I thought that somebody had rolled up in my life. Because I literally, like, I can go line for line and make parallels to every line in that song to my relationship with this man. Do you understand that?
No,
like,
I get it.
This
I get
man
it.
Helped me realize that, like,
you're worth something.
Well, that took me years to figure out, but it helped me learn the power of words, and it helped me learn the power of being quiet. because there's so many times in a relationship as a woman, you're just like, I need you to understand. I need you to understand. You're not listening to me. You're not listening to me. And I learned from this man, if you just be quiet, because men, especially black men, are just accustomed to just, you grew up with your mom yelling at you and then your girl will yell at you. And it's just like, you can tune this out. But when you get quiet, that's when I realize men will go, oh, shit, she's thinking. Nah, fuck, I got to go to put a dick in her or give her food. Like something, she's not talking, she's thinking something. She could murder me. The thing that fucked me up the most about this song is when there's when she says, nobody stands. The whole line you're talking about how the dude's trash. But then you're saying, nobody stands in between me and my man. It's me and Mr. Jones.
She's not. This is the thing. I don't think she's calling this guy trash.
What kind of, like, you called the man fuckery, which isn't a good thing.
Which was almost the title of the song. They were going to call it fuckery.
Me and Mr. Jones is a way better title.
It's reminiscent of Billy Paul's 1972 hit, Me and Mrs. Jones.
I know that song.
About an illicit affair with a married woman. This song is actually about Queens, New York rapper Nas, who Amy had a crush on. Nas.
Is that Nasir the Slick Rick gig?
So no, while they began a close friendship over the phone and computer, and they guested on each other's songs, Nas and Amy only met once and only hung out in person for a few days. But she's like flirting with him. That's the whole song. She's flirting. Here.
But it is a flirt. That's what I'm saying. Like when you're in a relationship, like when you're in a back and forth, this song is the best way. It's like it's a push and pull. The whole song is talking about a push and a pull, right? You don't mean dick to me, but I'll let you make it up to me. As in...
Yeah, that's it. It's about a crush. He stood her up, so she missed the Slick Rick gig, you know?
Yeah, he stood her up.
Or not, maybe, I don't know if he stood her up, but my understanding is, like, maybe she went to do something to hang out with him because she has a crush on him. I don't know the actual story of it, but what I do know is that this is just such a sweet, beautiful song that is so sweet because it's just about being attracted to somebody. Best part of the whole song is the outro.
That's what you got from this song?
Play the outro at 202, buddy. That is just fucking perfect. Now, who is your celebrity crush?
Well,
if you could fuck any celebrity, who's it going to be?
You
could go any history. You could go all the way back to, like, you know, fucking.
So I'm not confined by space and time?
No, you could fuck Frederick Douglass if you want to.
My mom wants to fuck him. Harry Met Sally, Billy Crystal.
What?
Deadass. So serious.
Why? Why are you?
Because he looked good in that movie.
That's crazy.
Yeah, people give me that reaction a lot.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say I want. I think you're the first person next to his wife that's come out of his mouth. I want to fuck Billy Crystal.
Harry Met Sally, Billy Crystal.
Yeah, you're not gonna take him from fucking.
Not now.
You're not doing Mr. Saturday Night, Billy Crystal.
Hell, I could do City Slickers, Billy Crystal, if you really want to know what's happening.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see Running Scared, but not, you know, him and Gregory Hines, because he looked good there. That was like.
Or maybe like a Willy Wonka, Gene Wilder.
No wonder you're attracted to me. You're into these funky ass fucking ugly guys, and then I fit in.
Billy Crystal's not ugly.
Gene
Wilder had doll eyes.
All right, next song on the record is Just Friends, like us.
Just platonic friends.
Play a little bit of Just Friends.
When will we?
This is about whether or not Amy and Deadeyes Needle Dick can get past their romantic past and just be friends. P.S. They couldn't.
Yeah, that's what me and this man were trying to do. We were trying to be like, all right, let's be friends. And then it would just not work.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is, like, so
because we'd end up sleeping together again or just bangly that, and it's like, all right, well, we're not gonna date, we're just gonna be friends, we're just gonna hook up, we're just gonna hang out, we're just gonna, and it was like, it's all of this, and I'm like, why are we trying to do this? But then it gets to the point where you love somebody and you're like, okay, I have a romantic love for you, not a general love for you, So I want to see you and I want to do that. And it's the same shit over and over and over again. And that's literally what it is. It's like, I'm trying to be friends with you. And it won't work.
Yeah. All right. You ready to get into Back to Black, which I think is her best song she's ever done?
Go ahead. I think that's the best song on the whole album.
Yeah, so do I. Play the chorus at 208.
You go back to her and I go back to
black. So, first thing, when I heard this song, I was like, this swings like a slower Baby Love by the Supremes. Play a little bit of Baby Love real quick. Hear it?
Yeah.
So this was actually inspired by the Shangri-La's Remember Walking in the Sand. It's a perfect description of being jilted in a relationship for another person. Okay. Producer Mark Ronson said it took Amy Winehouse about 2 or 3 hours to write the lyrics and melody to Back in Black, or Back to Black, I'm sorry. From start to finish, the lyrics are a masterclass in concision. The thesis, I died 100 times, you go back to her and I go back to black, perfectly describes the point during a breakup when there are no more moments to overanalyze and all that's left is the fact of the hurt. And that's why I love this song.
I'm sorry, I just had a flashback. It's like an emotional flashback, so I don't know how to fix that.
What just came back?
Just how I felt when I was listening to this song. Cause like if I think about it correctly, like this is like I dated a guy before him. I dated like 2 guys seriously before him, and actually was engaged to somebody before I met him. But when you think of like your first love, like this was my first love.
Yeah.
So there were so many times where it was just like, I don't know what I did to this person.
To make him treat you like that?
Yes. And I don't.
You didn't do anything. It's not you.
Right. But the thing is, it's just like, I'm also 24. And I didn't have like a lot of boyfriends in high school. And I didn't have a lot of, like, this is my first person that I really, like, really loved. And I just remembered, like, all of those times I couldn't get what I wanted. Not what I wanted, but, like, I couldn't get what I was feeling reciprocated back from this person. But I also, I didn't know if anyone else was going to love me. I just knew this person did. And I was trying to figure out everything I could do to get him to love me, to get him to show me he loved me the way, same way that I showed him that I loved him. And so there were so many times that I felt pushed away and pushed away and pushed away. And I just didn't have it in me to go, I'm not going to talk to this person anymore. And I just didn't have it in me. To be like, I have to not see him. Because like, I'd have these moments where it's like, I'm not going to see him. I'm not going to do this. I deserve better than this. And there was something in me just like, but what if you don't deserve better than this? This is a relationship. You have to work at it. You have to do this. Like, he has. And that's just kind of where I was. And I just kind of felt stuck. And then there's him. And then I dated a stupid friend. And so it's, the friend just ghosted me out of the fucking blue. Don't know what happened. And he starts dating this other girl. So now I'm just like in this weird fucking place that I think kind of followed me through subsequent relationships. So anytime I would play that song, I would always remember how bad I felt in that relationship. Even when I listened to it while we were still together, but I still wouldn't leave.
Yeah. A lot of people don't, you know. I stayed in a relationship a year past the expiration point, you know, and it's because when you're with somebody, you feel like you're whole, or and like if like the guy's going away, then you start judging yourself and saying, I'm wrong for this. It's like there's nothing wrong with what you did. That happens to people all the time.
Right. And then the other thing is he went to Afghanistan for a year to be a mechanic in Afghanistan for the Army, asked me to wait for him. And when he came back, he told me he didn't want to be together.
What a fucking dick.
Oh, yeah. And the dick was
well, you
not
know what?
That great.
You know what? It all made sense because you love Blow and he loves Puff. You know what I mean?
He because of Blow and cooking is the only reason. And when I say Blow, I mean Blow jobs is the only reason he kept me around, because I'm good at sucking a dick and cooking food. Josh?
I mean, producer Mark Ronson was introduced to Amy via their shared publishing company, and they talked about what she was inspired by for her next album. Mark came back the next day with the piano riff and drum pattern for this, which led to 5 or 6 songs being co-written in a couple weeks. And something I thought was really cool, because this is her best song. I think this is the one that everybody thinks of, because it's just like you said, it's heart-wrenching. It's a heart-wrenching song.
When she just says black repeatedly.
Oh, it's kills. Dude, if you watch it in the documentary where it's just her in the booth singing it, and she's just reading her notebook, I mean, it's you feel it, dude. In 2018, NPR ranked this as the number 4 greatest song by a female or non-binary artist in the 21st century. It's a little interesting. The next song, though, is probably, I don't think it's her best song, but it's my favorite one that she's ever done, and that's Love is a Losing Game.
You know this song? One, bitch, duh. Because you heard how I emotionally got on the last song. But I would skip this song. One, because I was already sad from the previous song, so I had to skip it so I didn't spiral. But also, the music is, for me, oddly a little upbeat. So you're saying love is a losing game, but it's just this is kind of like, here, you play it and you're like, to me, it's not very upbeat, but there was just something.
It's not upbeat at all.
No, but there was just something about it was like, it doesn't have the gravity of Back to Black.
See, I think this is, I mean, this is, Back to Black is now she's lost, you know, she's back to her original sadness that she is experiencing because that's all she's got. And love is a losing game is her accepting, you know, of what love is and what it was in that relationship. Peter, play minute 15.
Self-professed, profound, dildo tips were down.
I'm thinking young love when I hear the music, but I'm hearing love is a losing game when I hear the words. And I was like, I'm already crying. I can't do this. And so I would always have to skip that. I would listen to it, and by like minute in, I'd have to skip the song because I was listening to the words and I was like, nope, can't do it, girl. I love you. Bye, bitch. I can't do this with
you. Yeah, I got it.
Because
I mean, dude,
I already feel like I'm fucking up.
Well, is love a losing game?
I don't think so, because there's so many kinds of love.
Sure.
So it can't, because
we're talking about specifically romantic.
Oh, I have. I think for me, it hasn't been good. there's been times where it's been good, but I can count them on one hand.
But that's the thing. It's just, listen, it's out there. Trust. You have to trust in that. You just keep being the kind of person that you are and looking for what you want. And
yeah,
and,
but like there's so many people
don't say you'll
that,
find that.
Yeah, but there's so many people that people say that to.
I see, you have to say that to everybody, because that's just, there's mantras of life that you just have to accept. It's just like you can't. There's somebody out there for you. You now know what you don't want
right. From
a guy, and if a guy shows you that shit that the mechanic showed you, you're gonna fucking peace, motherfucker.
You
peace.
Hope I would. Yeah, I was like seeing this guy in New York, and I'd never had someone speak to me the way this man was attempting to speak to me, like just truly. Like, just truly out of the frame. And I just went, and it was like, it was 4 days that I hung out with this man. It felt like 6 fucking months. And I was like, I am out of this. And he.
It was bad or it was good?
Oh, awful.
All right, well.
Horrible.
I mean,
So, but that was the point. And so one of the girls at work was just like, did you learn anything? And I was like, I learned that if this was a couple years ago, I would have continued to speak to this man.
There it is. But you didn't.
But she was like, well, how much longer? I said, I don't know. Maybe he would have lasted 3 weeks. Because I was going to have to murder this man in his sleep for the way he was talking to me. But also, them New York dudes, it's always too early to wake up to that accent.
Hey, how you doing? You
look. Hey, Ma, you want some eggs? Nigga, sit down. Why are you clapping? Why are your shoes
on? They all sound like Method Man. Hey, yo, Ma, always, what you doing?
Why are you swaying? We're not in a music video. Quit moving. It's exhausting, and they always have on shoes.
Yeah. All right, so we just gotten through about six songs that I think are perfect in every way. Now we're getting into the part of the album that I do enjoy. It's just not as it didn't hit me as much. So you have Tears Dry on My Own.
Which you need after the last two songs.
Yeah, I guess you do. You definitely
You need
do.
Those songs. You need to go, you can make you feel better.
It's so good too. They're great songs. I just was a little it did not hit me the way the first six did. Then you have Wake Up Alone.
Which I do every day.
Jesus Christ. I do too. Well, I have Lekka. But this was the first song Amy wrote during a month of songwriting sessions with British producer and composer Paul O'Duffy. It's another breaking up song.
I almost cried twice when I was listening to that song. Yeah. Here,
play a little bit of it. Play a little bit of Wake Up Alone for me.
It's okay in the day. I'm staying busy, tied up enough so I don't have to wonder where is he.
I mean, that's so beautiful. All right, Some Unholy War. This is another song Amy wrote for Dead Eyes, Needle Dick. And it's a great song. And then you have He Can Only Hold Her.
But with the song Some Unholy War didn't affect me until the mechanic went to Afghanistan.
Really?
So when I would listen to that song, it had a different significance because he was in fucking Afghanistan.
Sure.
And if any war is an unholy war,
it's the Afghani war.
It's that one. But it was also the conflict between still dealing with him being gone, and then him being at an actual fucking war.
Hilarious.
So.
Then we go into He Can Only Hold Her. I think this is a catchy song. It was written and demoed by producer John Peanut Harrison, which I just love nicknames, so Peanut's a fucking good one. And then the final song on the record, which I think is after all of these breakup records, after all of these songs about love ending and being sad and crying and how love is a losing game, you have Addicted, this beautiful song about how a friend's boyfriend smokes all of Amy's treasured weed, and it's just fucking perfect.
That wasn't on my album.
Well, it was. It's been on every single one. It's on the one on Spotify.
It was not on the one that I purchased in Atlanta, Georgia, in 2008 from the Best Buy on La Vista Road.
Well, here, let's play a little bit of the song. Let's just do that.
Don't make no difference if I end.
I love that so much. Don't make no difference if I end up alone. I'd rather have myself and smoke my homegrown. It's got me addicted. Does more than any dick did. It's such a weird song on an album of all this super, super heavy emotional shit.
Why do you think they put it on there?
Because she loves weed. And I think that
But why
she,
not put it on? But like,
it's also an upbeat, fun way to end the record after something so heavy.
So America was just like, fuck your feelings. We gonna let you be sad. And the UK was like, hey, we can't do that to people.
Yeah, I love that. I just think it's such a great song, man. It's such a great song. I think it's I
heard some of it, I was like, oh, this is a weed song.
But it's such a fun way to end the record. All right, you want to do some facts and we'll get you out of here?
I'll do facts. What a fix.
I'll go back to
You want me to do
facts.
It? You want me to sing it?
Go ahead.
I'll go back to facts.
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 Do it again. I'm going to go low.
Facts.
sex that we harmonize. All right. In 2005, Amy began dating Dead Eyes Needle Dick. Yeah. 2 years later, the two got married. 1 year after their marriage, he was sentenced to 27 months in jail for assault and attempted battery due to his involvement in a bar fight. He admits.
Not on her, though.
No, not on her. But I mean, who knows? Needle Dick admits he was the one that introduced Winehouse to heroin. Her drug addiction became worse once he went to prison. He will always be infamous for introducing one of the greatest artists of all time, which is Amy Winehouse, to heroin. So let me ask you this. How would you now recognize a toxic relationship, whether it be love, family, or friendship? And how do you get out of it too? Like give our listeners some advice.
I think sometimes when it comes to when I like someone or I love someone, I have a tendency to put blinders on. And so now that I am older, I don't have the same blinders, because the blinders that I have are starting to come down with people. So because I'm trying to see people for who they really are and those blinders are coming down, I think when you love someone, depending on how you love, people can take advantage of that. So I think you have to be it's hard to be truthful with yourself. So if you can't be truthful with yourself, you just have to see if everyone loves differently. But if you can't be completely truthful with what's happening, can you be truthful in the fact or pay attention to the fact if that person is loving you in the way that you need to be loved? Not only is because one of my love languages is gift giving. So that's just what I do. I like to give people stuff just because it's how I communicate love to people. And it doesn't have to be something expensive. It was just like,
could be an empanada.
Could be something. Could just be feeding my friends. But if you're with somebody and that's not their love language, and say theirs is attention, then you have to pay attention to the fact of how this person loves, shows you, and expresses love. And if that person is not expressing love to you in the way that you understand, and you tell them and nothing changes, then that's not a good person for you. Because I'm not saying you can't change somebody, but somebody who loves you can change for you. Because if you really love somebody, you will love them the way they need to be loved. That's what I got from the entire album, was like, oh, girl, you are in a bad spot. And if I had listened, I would have let that go. But when you think about Back to Black and all these other songs, it's none of the songs say that the relationships came to an end.
Yeah, it's true.
Not a single song on that album said, and it was done, and I was
over. Because
it
wasn't. I think it went on until she died.
It did go on until she died. Yeah. Because relationships like this are what kill you. Relationships like this are what kill you. Relationships are what kill you mentally, spiritually, physically, emotionally. These are the relationships that break you. Because it's to a point where you're just like, I have to fix me. I have to fix them. I have to fix this. And it's not even fix. It's just sometimes the reason me and this man kept going back together is because I wanted closure. I wanted to be done. And in those moments when I thought where I was done, I always thought the closure had to come from him. We had to come together and be like, all right, we've been doing this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 fucking years. One of us has to go, we're done, and the other one goes, you're right. And that never happened. So that's why it kept going. Because I never went, I'm done, and I'm done. I don't care if he's not done. And that's what this is. And that's what a lot of this shit is. And she was the same age that I was probably when she started dating this fucking man. If she died at 27, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. She's a baby.
I was in my early 20s when this bullshit started. She was in her early 20s when this bullshit started. So I could understand because you're in your 20s.
She's a baby. She doesn't know.
And I was a baby. Yeah, I know that. And you're a baby.
And that's what I'm saying is that that's what you need to take out of this. And I think what everybody else needs to take out about why that relationship happened. Because we're all like, why would you be, Amy, why would you be with Needle Dick? Like, why would you
because
be with this?
Because you're fucking
23. Because you're 23. You're a fucking baby.
Idiot. Yeah.
All right. Amy's father, Mitch Winehouse, drove a London cab so he could test out how Back to Black would sound in a normal listener's environment. He would play CDs of her mixes in the car that he was driving. I think that is great. Do your parents fanboy out over your career?
I don't know. My mother's very proud of me. I just did this thing for OWN and Ozzy TV called Black Women on the Conversation. And the episode I did was about motherhood, and they filmed it in Atlanta, so I brought my mom. So, and then when I did Steve Harvey a couple years ago, my mom and me just happened to be in Chicago at the same time, so I brought my mom. But my mom has always been really supportive. She is part of the reason that I do stand up. But my mother's always been supportive. So I don't know if it's a fanboy. Well, she might, because she got like this heat press machine and all this other stuff for making like t-shirts and stuff. And so I was in Bus Magazine like a couple months ago. And so she printed the picture of me from Bus Magazine on like the satin pillowcase and gave it to me when I came home. So, and she made like another t-shirt. She's like, Deuce, you can have merch. So now she's like making all these t-shirts and stuff with me on it. So I think she does.
That's fucking dope. I want a t-shirt.
You want a me t-shirt? I'd rather give you a pillowcase so you can lay next to me every night.
All right, last one. The last recording Amy did was a duet of the classic 1930 jazz standard Body and Soul with famed crooner Tony Bennett. While acknowledging the sadness of her passing, Tony praised Amy as a true jazz singer. Which she was, man. And that's coming from one of the greats. The last song played at Amy's memorial service was Carole King's So Far Away, which I listened to after I read that fact last night, and it's so beautiful. Listen to that on Spotify. Go listen to Carole King's So Far Away. It's a great song. What would be your swan song? Played at your funeral.
Knock if you buck. Knock if you buck.
What, well, I'm a ripper, screamer, sub-dum, dima, dum-dum, dum-dum.
Now you just sound like Bone Thugs and Harmony.
I think I did. Yeah, I did.
I would play the original Crossroads. That's not the original version. On the original album of,
I'm gonna miss my Uncle Charlie.
Listen, on the original release of East 99, that was not the version of Crossroads. It was a completely different version. When they did a second release of that song was a radio single that the next release of East 99, they made Crossroads. It was just an extra. It's like a bonus.
So you
track.
Want the original.
I want the original.
Peter,
Crossroads.
Play a little bit of the original.
He's probably
Crossroads.
Gonna have to go on YouTube. And while I even know you don't, you still got
love. Final thoughts on the album.
I can't listen to it anymore. Because it makes me have flashbacks. So I can't listen to it. Like, I can't listen to it for fun. Only song is probably No Good. Because it makes me think of that Diary of a London Call Girl show. But, or Rehab's like fun to sing at karaoke. I tried to do Back to Black at karaoke and it made me sad. So like that whole, I can't.
It touched you.
I can't,
it just touches you. It brings that. That's exactly what I love about music, man. It makes you think about a moment in your life. And I agree with that. I think this album not only deserves to be on this list, I think it could be a little bit higher. I think I hate that we have to talk about her drug use and we have to talk about her death. Because,
well, why do you have to talk about her drug use? Because like the songs are about the drug use?
It's just because that's when you talk about Amy Winehouse, it's not, you have to talk about the full story of it. You can't just, because it all adds to what was going on when this with this record. You have to talk about that dickhead to get to the bottom of this record where he should be forgotten.
Yeah.
And she shouldn't be. She should still be here. She should be one of the biggest stars in the world because I think she would have been on Madonna level of fame. But when you add heroin and a tumultuous relationship into the mix and fame and money and all that other stuff, That's the downfall. And that's what happens to so many people. And it's sad because this is a great record, man. This is one that I'm really sad to have to put down and pick up another record now, because I really wanted to spend more time with it because I loved it so much. And even though we didn't do every song on it, it's just every song on it is fantastic. Dulce.
Hi.
I love you to death. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for being so honest. It was great. It was really great. Holy Kentucky, that was an incredible episode. Big thanks to my girl, Dulce Sloan. For all things Dulce Sloan, go to her website, dulcesloan.com. You also can find her on all social media at Dulce Sloan. Don't forget to watch her as a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah on Comedy Central. Also, her half-hour Comedy Central Presents premieres on October 25th. Also, she'll be appearing in the upcoming animated Fox series, The Great North. I'll be posting Dulce's Spotify mixtape, and you can find that and every guest mixtape at the 500 website, which is the500podcast.com. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com and follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Please subscribe on Spotify, your favorite platform, or listen to the podcast anywhere you get your pods. And if you're listening on Apple, leave a rate and review. Now, we just listened to Amy Winehouse from 2006. For new music this week, my man, music director with a plan, Matt Pinfield, selected Ari Lennox, who is an R&B singer from Washington, D.C., who was inspired by artists like Erykah Badu and Amy Winehouse. She caught the ear of the one and only J. Cole, who immediately wanted to work with her. Listen to her new single, Up Late, on Spotify, and you can check out the link on our website, the500podcast.com. Now, if you're wondering why we do this, it's because I want my listeners that are in bands that need a help getting a break to send us their music. So if you're in a band and you're directly influenced by one of these albums or artists that we're breaking down, and you see it coming up on the list, send your music to the500podcast@gmail.com. Make sure you put the album and the artist that influenced you in the subject line. Next week is Jackson Browne week with his 1973 album, For Everyman. Listen to it on Spotify because you got some homework to do. Stay fleecy.